welcome to another Network Computing Security Channel podcast. I'm your host, Curtis Franklin, and this is a special Thanksgiving edition of the Security Channel podcast, made, at least partially, in a tryptophan-induced torpor. And I think, despite that, we've got some great things going on. You know, recently I had a chance to sit down and talk with Tom Gilbert about a question that I'd been curious about for some time. That's the question of government certification for products. When I get all of the press releases and notifications about products that I do, I find that many of them trumpet the various government certifications they've attained. One of the more frequent citations is for common criteria, but there are others. And I was wondering, if you're not making a purchase off of the GSA list, or if you're not, for some other reason, buying for a government entity, should you care? Is this something that should concern you at all? So when Tom and I began talking outside the podcast, and I realized this was an area in which he had some expertise, I knew that it was probably going to be the topic for a good podcast, and I think I was right. You know, there are all kinds of certifications out there, government and non-government, and while we see a bunch of them on any given product, it can be almost a job unto itself just to keep up with the certifications and try to understand which of them have meaning for you and which don't. Tom was real good about talking about what they mean and why they might be something that you want to pay attention to even if you're not drawing your paycheck from a government agency. Well, I'll be back at the end of the podcast to talk about what's coming up in future podcasts and maybe even a couple of things that I'm thankful for this particular Thanksgiving. But until then, let's take a listen to the interview I did with Tom Gilbert of Blue Ridge Networks. Well, Tom, I wanted to start. Your company, Blue Ridge Networks, talked to me earlier this week about a product that has some government certifications for its security compliance. Can you tell me what those are?
Certainly. We are in the security products business, and our products incorporate cryptography. It's a core part of our product, and therefore one of the most important certifications that we seek every time we produce a new version of our product is a certification called FIPS 140-2, which stands for Federal Information Processing 140-2, which is promulgated by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and it has to do with cryptographic systems.
Okay.
And the other one that we also have is called Common Criteria, which is actually an international standard. So those are the two that we think are most relevant to our customers and ones that we continue to invest a lot of time and effort in pursuing.
Okay. One of the things that you mentioned that I hear a lot of companies in the security space mention is the FIPS compliance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that FIPS compliance is important if you're trying to sell your product into the federal government space. But first of all, can you give me a sense of, you mentioned FIPS 140-2. What does that mean? If I'm not a government purchasing agent and I see a company putting that on their list of features, what does it tell me?
Okay, well, FIPS 140-2 is a comprehensive framework for evaluating and certifying products that incorporate cryptography. And this could include hardware products or software products. It really, once the certification is attained, attest to the fact that certain fundamental design and implementation characteristics necessary for the integrity of a cryptographic system have been implemented. And the reason this is particularly important is there is no book one can go find and read the steps, and if you follow the recipe, you have a sound cryptographic system. Crypto systems are an art to construct. It's very difficult to do well. There's a lot of bad cryptography, despite the efforts of very smart people. And so FIPS 140-2 signals to a potential buyer that the system passes some minimum level of capability to do what it claims to do, which is to protect information.
All right. Now, I assume that if I am, for example, with one of the various federal departments, it's likely that any product I purchase that deals with cryptography must have passed this certification. Is that a generally correct statement?
That is absolutely correct. For years, the Department of Defense has mandated that all commercial cryptographic products be FIPS certified. And by the way, certification, as opposed to compliance, indicates that the company has submitted their product for actual independent laboratory testing to verify that all the functions and mechanisms defined in 140-2 have been, in fact, implemented correctly. And then that report from that independent lab is forwarded to NIST for their final review. I would also point out that FIPS 140-2 is a joint U.S.-Canadian certification, so once it passes through the hands of NIST, it'll then go to Canada. And after that's all done, you get a certificate. NIST posts on their website those products that have been successfully evaluated. And so a purchasing agent can verify that the vendor's claims are, in fact, true, that they've actually attained the certification. And that, as I said, now has spread to most of the federal government. I don't think there's any agency we do business with that does not mandate FIPS certification.
Okay, so it's one thing if I'm buying for a department within the U.S. government, but let's say I'm simply a financial institution or I'm a company that has branches all over the country. Do I care if a product has FIPS certification?
Well, I think it amounts to this. Would you, for instance, fly in an airplane that did not have an FAA certificate? Would you accept a prescription from a doctor for a drug that had not been approved by the FDA? And so on and so forth. So most of these government regulations and certifications that vendors must comply with are ultimately designed to protect the consumer. In the case of a business, when they're buying security products, presumably they are purchasing them to protect their information, to protect their enterprise, in some cases to protect their ability to continue to do business. So for some businesses, frankly, there are certain types of security events that can be business-ending events. For instance, it's well known that a lot of intrusions into company networks could in fact result in the loss of critical information for continuity of business. And small businesses that don't have their ability to use their IT infrastructure for a week or more are highly likely to go out of business and never recover. So simple equation is, if I'm going to buy a security product, I want to feel confident it's going to do what it claims to do, because I don't get to get my money back. It's too late. My business is gone. And I had one chance to get it right, and I blew it. So, I want all the certifications I can find to make sure that the product does what it says, because as a consumer of that, as a business person, I don't have the ability to make that judgment. Cryptography is a very arcane art, and it is extremely difficult even for experts to determine that a system is sound. There are some very famous failures of cryptography that have cost American business probably in the order of billions of dollars over the years. And those might have been avoided with the proper certifications.
Well, one of the questions that I was trying to get at, and I suppose I should just ask it directly. Mm-hmm. We know very well that there are many instances in which government agencies and businesses function differently.
Yes.
Does a government certification in this case apply to the way a business conducts its business processes? In other words, while I can understand that a certification indicates that a product will fit very well with the requirements of a government agency,
mm-hmm.
does that necessarily translate into fitting well with what a business needs and its requirements?
Yeah, I think that's a very appropriate question. And in the case of FIPS 140-2 as an example, it's a very fundamental type of certification. There is nothing specific about government needs associated with it. It really has to do with just the absolute fundamentals of cryptography. So it applies to virtually any kind of product that uses cryptographic techniques for any kind of security function whatsoever. I can't think of a commercial product that uses cryptography that should not be FIPS certified. And as I said, there's nothing specific about government needs about FIPS 140-2. It's very much a fundamentals type of thing.
Okay. So from where you sit, it is something that is reasonable to look for as a checkbox item as you're drawing up your short list of products to consider if cryptography is part of the necessary feature mix.
I'd make a stronger statement. I don't think it's reasonable. I think it's absolutely essential. In other words, why would one purchase a security product if you didn't have the strongest possible assurance that it was going to protect you? I would also comment that making purchasing decisions for security products is not consistent with our normal product purchase intuition. Particularly in the IT space, both as consumers and business people, we have been conditioned and expect rapid evolution of features and functionality. We intuitively feel that new is better. And that's how we make purchasing decisions. Often, you know, purchasing decisions are made non-rationally, and then we look for all the check boxes to justify our intuitive decision. In the case of security, it's exactly the inverse. You cannot prove that a security product is secure. You can only prove it's insecure. Security testing is not about testing for functionality. It's about testing for unintended functions, in other words, failures. New is not better. Old is better. Because a security product that has sustained constant use by many people and passed a lot of rigorous tests is fundamentally more sound because it has not yet broken than a brand new product that has many new features which can bring with it bugs and design flaws. So there's an inversion of buying intuition that we're not used to applying, and therefore, depending upon third-party rigorous testing, I think is the only reasonable counter to our intuition to leap for the newest, greatest, fastest, cheapest, most heavily marketed and hyped product that has hit the market. That will certainly not be the most secure product you can find.
You know, as someone who has a fair amount of gray in my beard, I love it any time someone says older is better.
Oh, me too, Kurt. Me too. I've been around the block a few times myself.
Now, let me ask a question about the certification. Whenever we hear drug manufacturers, pharmaceutical companies, talk about why prescription drugs are so expensive. They say that the process of going through the FDA certification is horrendously expensive and adds bazillions of dollars to the cost of what they're doing. Now, we all know that anytime you're deploying security at some level, you have to weigh the cost of the security versus the potential cost of a security breach.
Of course.
So I've heard you talk several times about the independent testing. I guess my question is this something that adds bazillions of dollars to the cost of security? And is it in any danger of changing that cost-benefit ratio to a point where people will consider doing without?
In the case of FIPS 140-2, the costs are not onerous. We're a small business. It is an item we explicitly budget for. I prefer to apply those dollars to R&D, but it's a necessary part of doing business. So it's not onerous. For large vendors, it's absolutely unimportant from a cost pass along. So in general, I think the statement is absolutely no. I would also mention this. I think you're absolutely right. All businesses have limited resources, and resource allocation is an important part of doing business. And spending, you know, all of your security and IT budget for one, you know, gee whiz firewall while your back door is wide open is not good resource allocation. However, I would also say this relative to certified products, which I don't think have any discernible expense or price increase associated with uncertified. Where is the economy in purchasing a security product that will protect you 9 times out of 10? You know, it's the 10th time that's going to kill you. It's really hard doing a cost-benefit analysis on security products because you're protecting for events that are likely to occur very, very infrequently, but when they do occur, the downside can be infinite. So it's a very difficult equation to make, and it leads to a lot of irrationality in the market.
All right. Well, let me ask, as we're winding down towards the end of this, we spent a lot of time talking about FIPS 140-2, and I understand that's the particular certification criteria that you're most aware of, given what your company does. Are there any certifications you're aware of outside of that one that people should be aware of when they're looking at security products?
Yes, there is another one that's less well-known, but actually I think has broader significance for the commercial marketplace as well as government, and it's called Common Criteria.
Okay, what is Common Criteria about?
Okay, as the name kind of implies, it's meant to provide a common framework or virtually any kind of security product whatsoever. And therefore, it is it's very large in context, literally hundreds and hundreds of pages. It attempts to classify every possible kind of threat, every possible kind of security function, and so on. So it's a highly generalized framework. It's a multinational standards framework, if you will. I think now 15 nations support it and recognize one another's certifications. Because of its generality, it's difficult to apply. It can be very costly to certify against. But because of its generality, it can be used to help make buying decisions where cryptography, for instance, is not the primary function and you want a broader context. As someone once said, common criteria could be used to certify the effectiveness of a door lock. But it's primarily applied in, you know, IT systems for things like firewalls, intrusion detection systems, smart cards, VPNs, goes on and on. I mean, just about anything. So it allows for very broad comparisons, and as you pointed out, when someone's trying to make a buying decision about the effectiveness of security products, it could conceivably provide a better framework for comparing the effectiveness of classes of products. So how do I know whether I spend this year's budget on the latest intrusion prevention system, or do I beef up my VPN, or do I enhance my firewall, or so on? So it provides a common context. Unfortunately, not very many vendors have stepped up to it. It is more expensive than FIPS. It's more difficult to attain. It takes longer. Our first common criteria took us 15 months to complete. Cost three times more than we budgeted for, but ultimately it served us well in that we use it as a differentiator in the marketplace because very few other vendors in our space have it. So we believe it's worthwhile, and we've gotten both commercial and federal customer business because of it.
Okay, now you mentioned that with the FIPS standards that NIST is the body that promulgates and ultimately does the final sign-off on whether a particular set of testing has indicated compliance for certification.
Yes.
What is the body that holds the common criteria, if you will? What's the body there?
Okay, well, there is an international body. But each nation that subscribes to it has their own representative body which acts as the certifying authority. In the case of the United States, that body is called NIAP, N-I-A-P. NIAP is essentially jointly run by NIST and the National Security Agency. So two of our most security-focused parts of the federal government are heavily involved in that. And NIAP is charged with licensing, for instance, the actual commercial laboratories that do most of the testing, or in fact do all of the testing, and it works in a similar manner as FIPS. So a vendor will go to a licensed certified laboratory for common criteria. They will sign a contract with them. Ultimately, they will do all of the evaluation and all the testing, and then they will forward the results to NIAP for ultimate certification and notice providing. So NIAP hosts a website, NIAP.org, and at that website, a prospective buyer can look for products that have been certified. I think it's called evaluated in the case of common criteria. These are evaluated products. They've been evaluated against the common criteria and found to be in compliance or not, as the case may be.
Okay. Now, we're coming right down towards the end of our time here, but it sounds like with the importance that you're placing on common criteria, do you foresee a time when many more companies decide that they'll make the investment and have their products evaluated under common criteria?
I think it will become a necessity for any vendor who wants to seriously play in the security market, yes.
Well, Tom, I very much appreciate you taking the time to spend with us today to help sort out some of these certifications in the security space. Well, that was my interview with Tom Gilbert, and like I said at the beginning, I think there's some great things to think about in this whole topic of government certifications and what they mean to you, even if you're not a member of a government agency or an employee of some branch of the government. Next time, we're going to be talking about security from a slightly different point of view. You know, most of us spend our time focused on keeping the bad guys out of our network. But if you look at the statistics, it makes far more sense to worry about keeping those who are already in our networks from, whether through malicious intent or just inadvertently, doing us harm. Well, next time in the podcast, I'm talking with David Lynch, who spends his career looking at security from the inside. And I think there are some interesting things to chew on in this interview. I was very pleased with it. And I think that you'll find some interesting things in there as well. You know, I mentioned back at the beginning that there might be a couple of things that I was thankful for. And there are. One of them is getting to do this kind of podcast for you. I've got to admit, I am enjoying doing podcasts as much as I've enjoyed doing anything in the past 20-odd years of working as a journalist. But I also am thankful for the listeners, the readers, who take the time to drop me a note or give me a phone call or see me at a conference and let me know what they think about the articles and the podcast that we're doing for them. I invite you to do that. We do these podcasts for you. So take a minute and let me know what you think. If they are what you want, or if you'd like something else. If there is someone you would like me to talk to, let me know. You can send email to cfranklin@nwc.com. And I promise we will take your suggestions and your ideas into account as we move forward. Well, thank you for spending time with me. I very much appreciate that. And I look forward to talking with you next time in the Network Computing Security Channel podcast. Until then, this is Curtis Franklin. So long.